Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're talking microphones. We've got a mic expert here. Michelle Levitt from Heil Sound is going to talk to us about how to choose the right microphone and some of the technologies behind dynamic microphones. It's all coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by the new Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo in your future at lavo.com/twert. And by the award-winning Telos Infinity IP intercom system. Plug and play, seamless, scalable, and matrix-free. Telos Infinity is the AOIP intercom solution that changes everything. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. It's the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And microphones is what we're talking about today. I can't wait. We'll introduce our guest in just a minute. First of all, I'm Kirk Harnack, the host of the show. I work for the folks at the Telos Alliance, and I'm back in studio. Last week, I was in Hawaii, and we were building a radio station there. We'll have some results of that for you on an upcoming show, but basically, we got 99.9% done with that. The studio looks great, and there's pictures posted on my own Facebook page if you're curious to go there and have a look. That's a good place to keep up with that. But the studio looks great and works fantastic. So we just have to build the transmitter site now. We got a guy on island to do that. But right now, our show is about microphones. And let's bring in my co-host. He's in an amazing location. It's a Chamber of Commerce day in Newark, New Jersey, with Chris Tobin. Hey, Chris, welcome in.
Hello, Kirk. Yes, it is. It's a gorgeous day, 66 degrees. As you can see, my natural lighting 8 minutes away is working just fine. And behind me is a backdrop of historic Newark, New Jersey. Yes.
I didn't know Newark was all that historic. Is there a highlight or two you can tell us about? I mean, I don't remember seeing that shot. Maybe you've been there before, but that's a beautiful shot. You're at the radio station, right?
Yes. You're in studio. I'm above the studio. I'm above the studios of WBGO, yes. And I'm using my 5.8 link to get from downstairs up to here.
Now, are you all battery powered there, or are you...
No, I'm on utility. I'm on shore power. Yeah.
Okay.
AAM. But come the summer, I have a project that I'm hoping to exploit, and the batteries will be involved.
You know, you are really motivating. You know, that Ubiquiti equipment is not very expensive at all, and you're motivating me to get out and do the show from some exotic places. Now, I mean, I go to, you know, I'm indoors at exotic places, but you go outdoors, and that's just so cool, especially on a pretty day.
Yeah. Why not? You know, it's fun to do. You got to get out from time to time. I just do it quite often.
Hey, you know, our regular viewers know that you weren't able to be with us last week. You had some last-minute things come up, a broadcast that you had to do. We had a bit of a fun time from Lihue on the island of Kauai in Hawaii, and that's the westernmost island. We're building a new radio station there. And so we had some of our partners. We have 40 different owners of this little FM radio station, and some of them flew to Hawaii to help out with painting and cleaning up the new studios and building the new studios and bringing the furniture inside. Most of it wouldn't fit up the stairwell at this building, so we had to remove a window and rent a scissor lift and bring equipment and furniture in that way. In fact, they brought a sofa up yesterday after I left. They brought a sofa up that way. It was pretty exciting. But maybe Chris, someday you could think about taking a vacation and on Kauai and visiting our radio station.
I might just do that. That's very tempting. That would be fun.
I do have a job for you. If you go there, you can label all the wires that I have foolishly left unlabeled.
Go ahead, mock if you will.
No, I'm not mocking. I'm a color coding kind of guy. They're color coded, and you know, okay. So I'm the position usually. Okay, in this switch, it doesn't matter what the wire is. If it's blue, it goes in this set of holes. If it's green, it goes in that set of holes.
That's fine. That's another form of labeling. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So if they're gray wires, then they're on the business network.
Perfect. So, that's good.
Oh well. That's why I have three or four different color of RJ45 boots with me. Oh, well. But there's times when, you know, you got to pull out the right wire and, oh, well. Hey, Chris, our guest today is Michelle Levitt. She was with us for a few minutes during our NAB live broadcast, and we enjoyed hearing from her so much. I enjoyed her knowledge of microphones so much that we asked her back. And she agreed to come back for a whole hour. So let's bring in Michelle Levitt with Heil Sound in Fairview Heights, Illinois. Michelle, welcome in.
Thanks for having me. Glad you're here. Your mic sounds great, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
In fact, that's one of the topics we're going to talk about. Hey, I want to mention real quickly, our show is brought to you by a couple of great sponsors, the folks at Lavo, making audio consoles and mixing engines and networking and Ravenna and AES-67 and all that. We'll hear from them about their new Ruby console, and also brought to you by the folks at Telos. And we're talking lately about the new IP intercom called Infinity. It's really amazing. And if you've never had an intercom system before, well, you can get one really easily and just plug it into your network. And by golly, it's just amazing. Shipping now. So we'll hear from Martin Deister with Infinity in just a few minutes. So that takes care of our sponsor billboard here. All right, Michelle. So you work with Bob Heil, and Bob's been on our show as well. How in the world did you get involved with Heil Sound and Heil microphones?
Well, it's a bit of a family affair. So, I actually met Bob about 20 years ago when I was dating his stepson, and who I'm now married to. But yeah, so that's how I met Bob. But that wasn't how I started working for Heil Sound. And I get that question a lot. And it's a little bit like working for the mob when you work for your family. Like, once you're in, you better just love it because you can't get out.
So on the one hand, your job is the marketing and creative director, but in talking to you at NAB, it became apparent that your expertise is far beyond just, you know, how do we sell these things? You have a very intense understanding of microphones and mic design. And in fact, I got a feeling you might let us in on a few secrets and practical tips that I just couldn't get Bob to let go of.
Yeah, we're very hands-on here at Heil Sound. Everyone from, you know, the guy who packs orders out for our dealers to myself, we all have an intimate understanding of the products that we make.
Well, that's obvious talking with you. You know, one of the things we want to talk about is microphone basics. And this is let's make this this episode one of these shows. We go back to basics. We cover some basic stuff. So hey, if you're an old hand at this and you know some of these things we're talking about, just stay with us, because we're going to move into some more esoteric areas of microphone selection. And you know, when is the right mic, you know, what's the right mic for different applications? You might notice that Michelle is using a microphone that is that a PR35 you're using, Michelle?
It is.
Yeah. And let's check in with Chris. Chris, what you're not using a Heil mic. It's something else. What are you using there, Chris, handheld?
I'm using the M58 Beyer. It's a stick mic. This one is the omnidirectional dynamic. It's popular for a lot of news organizations and journalists overseas.
Yeah, I think you said the BBC uses that mic quite a bit for their reporters who are doing stand-ups.
Yeah. Yes, and when I worked for two network news agencies, we started using them and worked out very well.
Gotcha. And I'm using here, I'm back to my good old standby, the Heil PR40. I have sung the praises of this microphone for years. By the way, I don't know that I have my mic preamp adjusted really well for this microphone, because up until a little while ago, one that I often use for voiceover work is the Sennheiser. So we'll talk about some differences there on the show. But so, Michelle, it's come to my attention, and I guess I didn't really realize this until you just slapped me in the face with it. Heil Microphones doesn't make any condenser microphones. You make dynamic microphones. So why don't you give us a little bit of overview? What's not only the electrical difference, but what's the practical use difference of a dynamic mic versus a condenser mic?
So there are a few different kinds of microphones. Condensers and dynamics are probably the most easily found. A condenser microphone element is actually closer to a computer chip inside it. They're very sensitive. They're meant to be sensitive. They're meant to be in like studio environments, very controlled spaces, not someplace where you're going to have a lot of extra outside noise. And a dynamic microphone. Kurt, do you know the only difference between a dynamic microphone element and a speaker?
Well, I guess one receives audio and turns it into electricity, and the other one takes electricity and turns it into audio. Yeah,
that's exactly right. And when you look at one of our elements, it very much looks like a speaker cone, because the only difference is the direction that the sound is going.
That's right. And so, remember, I'm really, really old. So I went to schools that had really old equipment made typically by a company called Duquesne. And that are the speaker in each classroom doubled as a microphone. So from the switchboard in the principal's office, they could, you know, normally everything was a speaker, but they could reverse it and make it into a microphone. And so the teacher could yell something back, you know, or she's not in here, you know, about the teacher when the principal is asking for, you know, is Mrs. McGillicuddy in there? No, she's not in here. She's taking a smoke break. So they can hear us back, you know, from the speaker turned into a microphone. Is that, that's how that works, huh?
Yeah. And so essentially you have a dynamic microphone when you do that. Because it's just a diaphragm that moves sound waves and turns them into a signal.
Now, I got to believe, though, there's a lot of, I mean, normally you wouldn't use a speaker. A speaker doesn't make a great microphone, even though it's the reverse operation. So so we talked about dynamic mics and condenser mics. Chris's mic, he's outdoors. That's definitely a dynamic mic that he's using, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this one's dynamic. Although I'm indoors, I could be using, I brought a couple examples. Here's a condenser mic that I used to use. This one's made by a company called Violet, and it has a super high retail price. And it's fine. It's very natural sounding. And then I've shown this one before. This is a $14 or maybe $19. Anyway, it's a cheap condenser mic made in China. And, you know, in a quiet environment, it's okay. It sounds a little bit gritty, but you know, if you have to build a studio and you have to spend, you know, less than $20, then you can buy a mic like that. But both of these, as you point out, Michelle, they pick up everything, and that's not always what you want. So
not always.
What's the downside of picking up everything?
Well, if you're doing a podcast from your garage, it means you're going to pick up the neighbor walking their dog outside. If you're in a controlled voiceover studio, it's probably going to sound amazing, but you're going to hear like the hairs on your tongue. So hopefully you have a really good engineer. Whereas the dynamic microphone is a more concentrated sound that it's not meant to pick up things outside a small sphere of space.
So I know that in the world of dynamics, though, there are mics that are pretty much omnidirectional, and then there's cardioid, and then there's a pattern called hypercardioid. Can you tell us about the different patterns? And maybe if you want to just go into, you know, how is the mic constructed to get these different patterns? And I'll point out, you could do this too with your mic, but I've shown this before on the show. So I'm talking right into it now. And it sounds just great. I can use a very low tone of voice and it sounds great. But as soon as I move off this microphone, then all of a sudden you can hardly hear me anymore. Just barely. And from the back, you can't hear me either. So I hope that was a pretty good demo of this mic is extremely directional.
Yeah. All of these microphones that we make are that way. And so they actually allow you to demonstrate what a polar pattern is in a really interesting way, because I explain it as almost like a force field around the microphone, that's where the audio is going to be picked up. So a cardioid microphone is only going to pick up audio out of the front. It's going to be pretty uniform from left to right, but it's only going to be like right here, wherever the element sits in the microphone. In the case of this microphone, the element's right about there. In the case of your microphone, the element is about an inch down from the windscreen from the top. Yeah.
Up there.
So it's only going to pick up audio forward from that microphone. So an omnidirectional microphone is going to pick up almost in a sphere, like all the way around the microphone like this. It would be good if you were doing an outdoor interview and you needed to just sort of hand the mic back and forth. Or if you were wanting to use one microphone to set in the middle of a conference table for like a conference call where you wanted everyone's voices to be picked up, that would be a good use for that. Now, a hypercardioid mic actually has a spike out the back to where it's going to pick up audio out of the back side of the microphone, which so it's a little different. It's like a cardioid in the front, and then it has a spike out the back for more audio.
So can you tell me anything about the design of how they play? Is there just one diaphragm in here, or are there two that electrically work against each other? How do you achieve that? How does it not pick up anything in the back, but it picks up the front? I got to believe there's some microphone element magic going on there.
There is. So what happens with all of our microphones is it's about placement and air. So the PR40 is a great example that the microphone element, where it's sitting in the top of the chassis, there's a long column underneath it that's attaching to the lower section. And all of that air is rushing up the backside of the microphone and being rejected, if that makes sense. Which is why speak into the back of the microphone, you can't hear hardly anything.
So I've never taken this apart. Does this have one mic element or more than one mic element in here?
Just one element.
Just one. So its directionality is achieved purely by mechanical design means, not by electrical means.
Correct.
Right? Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, Chris, show me your microphone and what's its response like off axis or toward the back?
All right. Well, this is the microphone directly on. Then I'm talking to you from the side. I'll show it in the camera there. And I'm talking from behind. You probably still hear me. It's omnidirectional like it should be.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's less off the sides and back, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's ideal, as Michelle pointed out, for outdoors, so you get the nat sound of the conversation that's taking place. So it don't sound too isolated. Because the worst thing you can do in audio and in visual and with sound is be where I'm at right now, rooftop, and sound like I'm in the studio, even though you see all this wonderful blue sky. So you want that nat sound. So that's why this microphone is what I use when I'm doing this stuff. When I'm in the studio, I do have choices of condenser, dynamic, velocity. There's a few different mics I play with. We've done it a couple of times on the show.
Gotcha. So Michelle, because condenser mics are often used in a studio, like, you know, the famous Neumann U87 is often used in recording studios, there is an impression that a condenser mic is in some ways better than a dynamic mic. And perhaps I'm sure that for some applications it is, but, can you use a dynamic mic for a recording studio session, even in a quiet studio? And if you can, what would be some typical applications for a dynamic mic in a professional studio application?
Yeah, absolutely. Our microphones get used a lot in studios. We do get used in voiceover studios. They do have a very isolated sound, so it does sound like you're sort of more in a studio environment. Because our dynamic microphones have a wider frequency response, a lot of people comment that they sound more like condenser microphones than dynamics. I think that's just people will have to change their perception of what, you know, dynamic microphones sound like. But condenser microphones, there's definitely, you know, a time and a place for those. And these just... you know, obviously this is what we use here. And in an environment like I'm in my studio that I work out of, and we produce videos out of here and podcasts and lots of other content. But just outside these doors, there's a manufacturing plant out there. And so I want this to sound like a professional studio environment. So I would probably not choose a condenser microphone unless I wanted you to hear our chihuahua running around out by the kitchen.
You mentioned a podcast, and I think I've heard about this before. What is the name of the podcast, and how often is it, and what's it about?
So we did a podcast for the 50th anniversary of Heil Sound. Mm-hmm. So we're not producing the podcast currently, although we have lots of requests to do it again. So it's called 50 Years of Maximum Rock and Roll. And for the 50th anniversary, we sat down with Bob and had him tell some of his stories. And if you've ever met Bob in person, he will tell you lots of interesting stories of his days with the Grateful Dead and The Who. And a lot of people had asked him if he would ever write a book, and he kept saying no. And then one year at NAB show, I asked him, would you do a podcast? And much to my surprise, he said yes. And so we hired a host, and the host interviews Bob, and it's just the two of them, and it's Bob telling his stories.
So, At the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, Ohio, there is a display of some Bob Heil designed equipment. Have you seen that display?
Oh, yeah.
So remind me, what's in that display exactly?
So the first modular mixer is in there. The Mavis mixer, which is famous for being The Who's Quadrophenia live sound mixer. So it actually was able to bounce audio in quad sound around like an arena environment. And it was the first of its kind. And we have some, of course, the big fiberglass speakers that we're probably most known for from the 70s. And they're very iconic looking.
So fiberglass speakers, what was the benefit of that design?
They were a little lighter, although I think they used like 11-ply plywood as part of them. So they are pretty heavy. but they were white fiberglass. And it was kind of a design choice that Bob made for marketing purposes because he thought that people would remember seeing them. And he was very right. They do.
Now, I may embarrass myself on the air here, but didn't Bob also invent some kind of a it's not called a vocoder, but what is it that you sing into and it makes your voice funny?
Box.
The talk box.
The
okay.
talk box.
What is that?
So the talk box essentially is a 10 watt driver, and it's a guitar effect. So instead of your guitar sending a signal to an amp and then that coming out, it gets sent to the talk box, and that audio then comes up through this tube, which you manipulate with the chamber of your mouth. You turn your mouth into like an acoustic chamber, and then that audio is actually captured through a microphone.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. And these are still for sale. Are you guys making these? Okay.
No, Dunlop makes the talk box.
Yes,
now.
I'm on the Dunlop website. We'll put a link to that in the show notes in case we have. I know we have guitar players in our audience, so that's pretty cool. Okay, so where would we have heard a talk box? Did Peter Frampton use one?
Oh, Peter Frampton, Joe Walsh, Bon Jovi, even Tool's latest album. So it's still a popular guitar effect. And I did get a chance to ask Adam Jones, because I'm not a guitar player and Adam Jones is the guitar player of Tool. I said, what does that feel like? Because I know that it's, instead of, you know, sound coming out of an amplifier, it's going into your mouth. So I, you know, could only imagine that the sound pressure levels were quite extreme. And he said, it feels like your fillings are being rattled out of your head. Like, okay.
Chris, you don't play guitar, do you?
No, I just record the instruments for the groups. I don't play any instruments.
You know, I wonder if the Twerk Show should have a theme song, and we should use the talk box to help record it. That'd be interesting.
That'd be very nice, yeah.
You can get like one of your jazz guitarists that comes through the studio there, WBGO, and rig up their guitar with a talk box and see what they could come up with for us. It'd be fun.
Well, yeah, we have some pretty interesting folks come through that would probably consider something like that. Be surprised.
You know, we do have a theme that we use at the beginning of our show that we have for years. And actually, I paid a musician actually in American Samoa to write the theme song and record it. So it's bought and paid for. But I wouldn't mind a more of a jazz feel for our theme song. I think it'd be kind of classy. That'd be good. We'll do that one day, maybe sooner than later. Hey, if you just joined us, we're talking with Michelle Levitt with Heil Sound. And she's not only the marketing and creative director there, she really understands a lot about how to choose the right mic. And I'm curious to talk about this. Tell you what, it's 25 after the hour. We're going to hear a brief message from our friends at the Telos Alliance and about the new IP intercom called Infinity. And when we come back, Michelle's going to talk to us about choosing the right microphone. And she and her husband go to various concerts, including some jazz concerts. And we'll talk about her own mic selection for her own playing and how to choose the right mic for instruments, for in studio, for outside. Even the correct microphone for a woman's voice, maybe, versus a man's voice, depending on the characteristics of their voice. So she's got some cool information about that. I'm very curious to understand what she has to say about that. We'll be right back if we hear this from Telos.
Hi, I'm Martin Deister, Vice President of Business Development and Product Director for Telos Infinity IP Intercom System. Telos Infinity is different to any other intercom system because it's the first IP intercom system that doesn't have a matrix. Great communication within the broadcast environment is essential to TV and radio production. With Telos Infinity, you can link all your production crew, whether it's the director in the production control room, sound guy in the booth, boom operator on the floor, your anchors in the studio, presenters out in the field, weatherman, even your weatherman. Production staff listening to communications audio are hearing crystal clear sounds. It means the nuances of the people communicating with them can be heard all the time. Everything is crystal clear and accurate. The master intercom panels that we've created include multicolor LCD switches. You can use color coding to group IFBs, to group production crew members, your remotes, anybody else. Matrix-free intercom means low cost of entry, low cost of design, low cost of installation from the get-go. With Telos Infinity, you start saving money the moment you install it, and you continue to save money for the life of the product. The same benefits that broadcasters all around the world have found by using audio over IP now apply to intercom for the very first time. Never before have you been able to communicate using program quality audio simply by connecting two devices into a network switch. It truly is plug and play. Programming an intercom system has never been easier than it is with Telos Infinity. With our advanced dashboard programming utility, you can have your intercom system out of the box and up and running in record time. I'm Martin Deister, inviting you to visit telosalliance.com to learn more about Telos Infinity Broadcast Optimized Intercom System, the first matrix-free IP intercom system optimized for broadcast.
Tell you, the whole world is going audio over IP, including intercoms. Really amazing stuff. Thanks a lot, Telos Alliance, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, it's Kirk Harnack along with Chris Tobin. He's out on the rooftop. Chris, are you there? Let's see Chris for a second. Man, it's looks such a beautiful day. Who knew? I thought Newark was cloudy and, you know, smelled like chemicals all day. But what a gorgeous day.
No chemicals today and plenty of sunshine. Clouds do roll in from time to time, but that's the weather. That's how it goes. But otherwise, no, it's great. This is downtown Newark, the business district. It's very nice.
So Chris and I are talking with Michelle Levitt. And Chris, our next segment here, we're going to talk about choosing the right microphone. And this is something that Michelle has a lot of experience with. And Michelle, you know, one of the things I like to do, one of the business mantras I have is to begin with the end in mind. And you said something, Michelle, during our pre-show meeting. You said, which mic makes you sound like you? And that sounds like a great ending that we should have in mind when we begin. So talk about mic selection, making you sound like you. And by you, I also don't just mean the human voice, but also drums and guitars and saxophones and flutes and whatever else you might have to put a mic in front of. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. So, I get a lot of people, especially podcasters that I'm talking to, or broadcasters. You know, we just came back from the NAB show. Everybody sort of talks about the PR40, and it's the gold standard if you're podcasting or broadcasting. And I say, yeah, it's a gold standard for a male's voice because, you know, my voice sounds a little less than natural through it because I don't have as deep a voice as like Kirk does. And so for me, I choose to use a PR30 or a PR35 like I'm using today because it is not as present on the low end and it makes my voice sound a little more natural. And it really sounds like me. This is what I sound like in real life. And I don't have to EQ this microphone to make it sound that way. And then when you get into something like a drum kit where you literally have different voices of drums, you can select specific microphones that highlight like a bass drum versus a cymbal. Like those sound completely different. You know, if you looked at the frequency response of those microphones, they're going to be set up in a way that highlights and makes whatever that particular thing sound its best.
Wow. Okay. So if I'm not familiar with the entire range of Heil mics. Now you've got this PR30 and a couple others. Maybe you can remind me what they are. If you were going to mic a drum kit, what are some Heil mics that you might choose to hit the different drums and cymbals with?
Well, I grabbed a couple small ones to show you guys because these are some of my favorites because they're teeny tiny. There are two smallest microphones we make, and they're both great for drum kits, but for different reasons. This guy fits just about anywhere, and this is the HandyMic Pro Plus, and it's a part of our drum kit if you buy one of the HDK5 drum kits. And this is a PR31 BW, and that BW stands for Bob Workman. He's the front-of-house engineer for Charlie Daniels. And he took one of our PR30 microphones and he sawed off the bottom half and then asked Bob if he had voided his warranty. and Bob said yes, but that's okay. And this microphone's kind of fantastic because for all the reasons that I explained to you about the polar pattern and the rear rejection, you can put a microphone like this under a cymbal and it won't pick up the drum below it.
Oh,
so
okay. Okay.
Yeah, so you can get a really isolated sound from a live sound stage, which typically just has a lot of, you know, bleed and noise. And so in, especially in a live sound environment. So if you're, you know, this is, it's ironic that, you know, Chris was talking about you want some of that atmospheric noise. Well, in a concert situation, you kind of don't, because there's so much noise on the stage that if you gave in to that, it would just be, you know, you might as well set one condenser mic on the edge of the stage and just call it a day. And acoustically, a drum set, you know, is sort of balanced, but there are some things that are louder than others. And there are some things that, because they're directional, like a kick drum, they sound louder than other aspects of the drum kit. So you want to be able to balance that sound out and make it sound a little closer to that album that you've been listening to at home. And so these microphones really do that in an incredible way. And I had an interesting experience. I used to live in Buffalo, New York, and there was this outdoor concert venue there that I had been to a few times. And it was one of those like permanent outdoor tents. And there was a stage and, you know, seats and lawn seats. And every time I went there, it sounded terrible. And I thought it was just because of the weird shape of the tent that maybe it was like catching, because it had all these peaks in the ceiling. And I, every time I'd go there, I'd look at it and go, who thought this was a good idea? Like, it's just sound trap after sound trap. And then I went to see Slayer. And Slayer's one of our artist endorsers, and their front of house guy, Tim Quinby, who's no longer with them, but had been with them for, I think, over 20 years. He had all Heil sound microphones on the stage, and it sounded amazing. And when I had seen that they were playing this venue, I thought, I'm going to have to put on my nice face and tell him it sounds good, even though it's going to sound terrible. But it really did sound good, because they weren't fighting any bleed, and they were basically being able to direct the audio better with those microphones, just because of the nature of the mics.
Let me make sure I understand what mean by bleed. And Chris, I'll have a question for you in just a second. In fact, I was going to do that, but then I want to mention this bleed thing. So is bleed when a microphone picks up more than you intend it to?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So it's going to, you know, if you had one microphone trying to mic the drums, you wouldn't be able to isolate or make the kick drum louder or softer than the rest of the drum kit.
Okay. And you mentioned kick drum. That's what I actually want to ask Chris about. Chris, in all your live studio stuff there at your station, do you have the chance to mic drum kits there?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. We have several different mic techniques we use for the drum kits, for the bass, saxophone, trombone, and the bleeding that happens. We have each microphone has its purpose to avoid the bleed. You solo it out on the board, and you can hear how much bleed there is. We've had a few issues. We have dynamics on certain parts of the drum kit. There are some ribbons on the other part. We do acoustic as well as DIs on the bass that we've had come through. Guitars. Yeah, there's a lot of bleed. We also shoot the videos of this performances, so we try not to do too much of the isolation walls between, say, a drum kit and a bass player or a guitar, you know, because visually it just doesn't look right. But actually, we have a PR40. We tried it on something. I may have to reach out to you, Michelle, and talk to you about some stuff this summer on a couple of studio projects we have. I'm curious to see about the bleed isolation capabilities.
So
sure.
Chris, you first, and then maybe Michelle has something to add. I'm curious about the bass drum, the kick drum. Some of these have a hole in the front of it, and you put the mic in the hole, and others don't. Yeah, I guess you just put the mic out in front of it. What's the difference in what you get? Why do some of these drums have a microphone hole in them? Have you seen this, Chris?
Michelle, I know her answer.
Well, so you can actually mic inside a drum, or you can mic outside a drum, and it's going to give you a different sound.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Remember, microphones work on air pressure. So depending on where you place the microphone and the pressure of the air being moved, so the outside of the drum or the inside has two different types of pressure points. So the microphone sounds different, will perform differently. So depending on the music, that's what you get. So as I like to tell folks, we've had a few students come through. We have a couple of universities here that do audio science, and a lot of students come in with this preset idea of which type of microphone, its physical placement, and how it should be done in instruments is always the same way. And a couple of times we've showed them, nope, it doesn't really work that way. You need to clean the slate every time you do a recording session. And it's interesting. But the hole in the drum, yeah, the bass drum is not always the best place, depending on the type of music and how the person plays the skins.
Michelle, you had mentioned that your own experience with miking a saxophone. And I think you were the performer, right?
Yeah.
I
met my husband playing in a jazz big band, and I started playing the saxophone when I was 12 years old, and I practiced a lot. I spent a lot of hours working on my tone and, you know, sort of perfecting my sound. And then I would get on stage to do a solo, and I would get a SM57 jammed down the bell of my saxophone. And I didn't know what that was at the time. I just knew, you know, based on what it looked like. And I hated it because it gave it a very sort of honky, nasally sound. It's sort of where that frequency response is peaked. And it's not quite meshed up with where the frequency response would peak on a tenor saxophone. And so, you know, all that time spent practicing would feel like it was wasted when I'd be standing on the stage, like hearing that sound and going, oh, this is terrible. And our director would constantly shove the microphone down the bell of my saxophone, and I would try to flee the microphone.
Oh. So what mic did you find? I guess you've got one that says Heil on it. What mic sounds good on a tenor saxophone to you?
This one's my favorite. The one I'm actually using for my voice, too.
The PR35.
Kind of ironic. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So now earlier you showed us those two mics and that little mini one. What was that called again?
Yeah, that's a Handy Mic Pro Plus. Teeny tiny little guy.
Handy mic. Yeah. And so what are some typical uses for that little guy?
Drums. And a lot of people will mount these actually, like permanently mount them inside a Leslie speaker.
Oh.
So, yeah. So, and it'll pick up that. So in case the listeners don't know what a Leslie speaker is, it's they used to be used for like theater organs. Yeah. And they have an oscillating speaker horns inside them, and it gives it almost like a vibrato sound. So it kind of has this wavy sound as it comes out, and they're notoriously hard to mic because where do you put the microphone and how do you angle it? And I recently was at a venue here where they were trying to get the microphone in just the right place, and it was a rock band that was using it, and they were using it very loudly. So it was almost like, you know, trying to mic something that was just blowing air straight into the microphone. So it's like putting a windscreen on it, like it was somebody talking into it.
Gotcha. Wow. I'm sorry, Chris, did you have a comment?
Oh, no, I totally agree, because we have a Hammond C3 organ with a Leslie, and whenever we use it, miking it has always been a challenge. So yeah, I can appreciate exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, double windscreen was the solution.
Yeah.
Michelle, you know, in Heil sound, I guess Bob Heil got started with live concert sound. I think he was called in to fix some problems and make a concert actually work, and things grew from there. So talk to me about what are some differences between miking live sound and miking things like in a radio station, like a lot of our listeners and viewers are going to be engineers and performers and such and operators at radio stations. I guess the big difference is in live sound, you're combating feedback. So you've got to have some good directionality and you want to, you know, not have things moving around a lot in terms of what's going to feed back. Or maybe there are other more important factors. So what to you are some big differences between miking live sound and miking studio mics or outdoors like Chris is doing?
Yeah, I think there are actually less differences for dynamic microphones than for like ribbons or condensers. But the big issue would be like feedback in a live sound stage would be the main thing. You know, in a broadcast studio versus, you know, a recording studio, if you're recording instruments, they're actually not going to be terribly different.
Okay. All right. How would a person, other than experimenting, we said the PR40, like what I'm using here, is good for male voices. And I listen to a number of podcasts, mostly guys talking, and they all sound really, really good on the PR40. And I just thought that the PR40 emphasizes the guy parts of the guy's voice, you know, so it matches the voice pretty well. And that PR35 matches your voice pretty well. Are there other mics in your line that maybe a person should try to match their voice characteristics?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have the highest pitch voice for a woman. So if you had a higher pitched voice than me, you might want to try a PR22. It's going to have even less low end than this particular microphone does. The other reason I recommend a microphone like this to women is that it has an internal roll off switch. So it's got a little hole like toward the back of the microphone here. And if you depress that, it's going to roll off the low end of the microphone and you're going to be able to have less bass. Even than this does now.
When we used some PR35s at the NAB show that Heil, you were kind enough to loan to us, they came with windscreens. And talk to me a bit about windscreens. And I mean, should you not use one unless you have to? What are some general rules of thumb about that?
Typically, you don't use a windscreen unless you have to. Most people who are talking into a microphone rather than singing into a microphone are more prone to plosives. So you would want a windscreen or a pop filter like you have on your mic. And I sort of help myself by talking off axis on my microphone instead of putting a screen over it. But it sort of depends on the person. I've heard people talk straight into a PR40 and it sound just fine because they don't puff their words out of their mouth the way I do. If I did that, it would just sound terrible. I'm probably one of those people that should use like a pop filter and a windscreen.
I guess the other use is what Chris is doing right now, since he's outside and got the wind itself blowing across there. He's not bad with plosives, but he's in the wind there. Chris, tell me about your windscreen.
Oh, it's the one that comes with the microphone. Yeah, windscreen microphone. It comes with the microphone. There's a breeze blowing. You can see my hair is moving about, and I'm sure it's not picking up as much as it could if I took it off. But, in our studios, we don't use any windscreens. I'll take that back. For one of the studios, we do. But for the performance studio, we just – everything is naked. We go right for it. It's good, even with singers.
Michelle, is there such a thing? I guess I've heard some mics tout that they have a built-in internal pop filter or windscreen. What is that about?
Yeah, so these do. The microphone that you have and the microphone that I have, they have foam on the inside.
Ah.
So that's, sort of giving you a little bit of a barrier. So for some people, that's just not enough. I'm one of those people usually. So just crosstalk the mic.
So, I guess there are really two purposes for windscreen. You mentioned the plosives. I wasn't thinking about that. But, yeah, that's the big thing for the performer. And then as Chris is outside, you need to have something to keep the – the wind will make quite a rumble across a microphone. And you want to get – two ways to get rid of that, one with a windscreen and the other with the roll-off filter, as you mentioned, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, tell you what we're going to do. Coming up in the final segment of our show, we're going to do some show and tell. Michelle might have a couple more mics there. I don't know. And I've got several more mics here. We'll just talk a bit about each one and we'll unbox this guy right here. And I think Michelle has one that's already unboxed. That's really sexier than mine. So we'll look at that in just a few minutes. Our show This Week in Radio Tech. We're here with Michelle Levitt from Heil Sound. Chris Tobin is with us as well. We're talking microphones and specifically about dynamic microphones and how to choose the right one. And we're going to look at a whole bunch of models here for the final part of our show coming up in just a few minutes, right after this from Lavo.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the Jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavo radio tech at www.lawo.com/twert.
And thanks a lot to Lavo for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. Check out their technology and their consoles. Pretty cool stuff. And if you go to that website, lavo.com/twert, it'll take you right to the radio products, and it'll also let them know that that we sent you, that you watched our show or listened to our show. All right, this is This Week in Radio Tech, episode 392. Michelle Levitt is along with us. She's with Heil Sound. And Chris Tobin is with us. He is outdoors, up on the roof. He really is on the roof. What is
yes,
that?
I am.
Yeah, you're good at finding the good shot, because you turned the camera around earlier and it wasn't so pretty, but you got the pretty shot there.
Well, yeah, so, no, this is a nice shot. I took the window just to see how this goes.
Michelle's been educating us about mics and some of the differences in mics and some of their uses. We're going to get back around to Heil mics in a minute, but first we're going to real quick, Chris and I are going to real quick go through and analyze a couple of microphones. Chris, first of all, your microphone is it's a long microphone intended for TV use. So it's got a dynamic element at the top and a long handle, so you don't have to have your hand way up in your face, right?
That is correct. I've taken the windscreen off, and I'm not sure if you're hearing much of the wind blowing around me. It's like on cue. The breeze has picked up, and now I'm talking into it. Does it sound like I'm outdoors? You hear fine?
I hear you fine, okay.
Good. So there's wind blowing, and this is nice.
So, and that one is a Beyer mic, right?
Beyer M58, yes.
Okay. Now, here's one that is kind of a similar design to yours. I'll show it on the screen here if we can get the camera switched over here. This is a Rode microphone. As soon as the camera switches, there we go. Yes. It's a Rode. I've used this one for some interviews. It's a long mic as well. Hello, Suncast. Are you there? Switch the camera. Okay, maybe we'll just be on Chris for a while. Chris, go ahead.
So over there in the distance is the IDT building. There's a church. Oh, sorry. We're back? Okay. Rode makes a microphone similar to this.
Ah,
the stick
there we
mic.
Go.
It's handy.
Yeah.
Look at that.
We're on a three shot. That might mean that Suncast will be away from the controls for a few minutes. So everybody look pretty for 20 minutes here. So we have this handheld mic. This is a Rode. Now, of all crazy things, I mean, as much as I love different microphones, my dad gave me this. He just chose it kind of randomly and bought it for doing some interviews, and he doesn't know anything about microphones. He just bought it. And I must say, I like it. It sounds good. It's probably very similar to your mic, Chris, would you say?
Yes, it is. I've used those. Every microphone has its sound. It's tailored a certain way. I've never believed that any one mic is better than the other all the years I've used microphones. And as Michelle pointed out, some work well with male voices, others with female. The symmetry of the voice can change. It changes the way the microphone reproduces. Dynamic mics are mechanical transference of sound and air pressure to electrical. Condensers are basically a capacitor, two little pieces of metal that move, more sensitive to everything around them. So you have to understand the principles behind it. And something as simple as a Rode mic could be just what you need for your particular application. Or in the case of what I've done a few things, Heil mics were definitely ideal because of the isolation they provide. Deeper isolation, I'll say that.
So I have another example here. This is a Sennheiser E85, I believe. And it's
oh, yeah,
it's
those.
a Oh, you do? And they also make this in a longer version for television use with a longer handle on it. And I'm not sure why I bought this one, but here it is. I have it, and I almost never use it, but there it is.
I have that microphone, and people have told me my voice does not sound exactly the same on that microphone compared to the one I'm using right now. So there is some coloring.
The one you're using now sounds like the Chris Tobin I know. Now, here's one. This is a little fancy schmancy mic. This is an RE27ND, and the folks at ElectroVoice came out with this one when they wanted to put rare earth magnets into a mic. And so, I unfortunately, this very one right here is broken. It doesn't sound right at all. And I'm not going to blame the folks at EV for that. I need to send it off to EV and have it fixed, because it's not proper at all now. And it seems to me that, I don't know if it's Bob Heil or if it's some other friends of mine here in Nashville. I'm getting confused. But we were at an SBE meeting within the last year and a half or so, and somebody said, hey, take your PR40 and compare it right next to your EV RE20 or RE27, and if you're a guy, you'll like the PR40 better. And I think I've done that, although not with this one. I did it with an RE20 that was actually working. But Michelle, if you got any comment, just pipe right up on any of these mics I'm showing here.
Sure. I'll actually come to bat for ElectroVoice. Send in your broken microphones, people. Because we get people all the time. They're like, oh, I don't use my whatever anymore because, well, it's broken. It's like, these things have warranties. Send them in. They get repaired. And we send them back.
And,
it's amazing.
And I know that EV is, I want to say they're owned now by Bosch, German electrical company. And now they have a fixed price. I mean, there was a time decades ago when EV would just about fix a mic for free, unless you'd obviously abused it. But they have a fixed price. I think it's probably $150, $170, maybe $200 to typically fix one of their microphones. So that makes it easy.
I have a question for Michelle.
Sure.
I'm curious. I've heard various stories, various things about this. The magnet, the quality of the magnet, the type of metal in a magnet for a microphone, dynamic microphone. How much of an influence does that have in the design, sound reproduction?
I don't know that having rare or common magnets makes too big a difference. I haven't tried enough microphones. I haven't tried the microphone that Kirk has, so I don't know that it would have any advantage over just our neodymium magnets.
Right. Okay. No, that's cool. That's the conclusion I've come to also from reading the various papers on these things and some of the patents. So I'm just curious. Okay.
So now I have in my hands here it's black, so it doesn't show up well against the shirt. I'll put it in front of my face. This is what I call a prop mic. It was $29, and I used it as a prop on a video. I don't think I actually ran any audio through it. And you know it's quality because it says right there, digital. Well, you can't, it's not focused. Digital reference. So it's a digital reference, nice. $29 microphone. But there is a picture ostensibly of the cardioid pattern of it there. But that's a fine $29 microphone right there. Again, good for being a prop. It might be good for other stuff too. I don't know. I really haven't used it.
Any surprise?
Any comment? Michelle, is this the kind of mic that makes for muddy bands in tent shape venues?
Yeah, probably.
Probably so.
Yeah.
All right. Couple other quick mics, just to help remind us of all the differences. This is Sennheiser MKH416. A lot of VO artists do use this. This one is a condenser mic, but it's also it basically has an RF generator. It runs like at 8 megahertz, and when you talk into it, it varies the capacitor, which varies the frequency of the oscillator, and then they decode that oscillator and turn that into audio. So I don't know all about that design other than it's fairly sophisticated. Maybe part of the reason why it costs $1,000 or so. It sounds nice on me. It sounds nice on some other people. It is not dynamic and it does help to have a quieter room. Earlier in the show, we quickly looked at a cheap mic like this. This is a Chinese made condenser mic. It's really cheap. It does have electronics in here. It does need the 48 volt phantom power or some phantom power. You know, in a real emergency, when it'd be a good prop mic. How about that? Now, Michelle, did you have any other mics before we get to the PR-77?
No, that's the last one I have laying here.
Okay. Well, we're going to do like a cooking show. I'm going to do the cooking here, and then you're going to show the finished product.
I love it.
Oh, I just happen to have one right here that I've cooked for you. So this is the new PR-77D, and I'm going to open it up. Try not to drop it. Comes in this nice styrofoam thing right here, and we actually should open the other side. How about this? Ta-da! There we go. Comes with a Heil Sound bag. I guess it's a bag. Is that a bag, Michelle?
Yeah, it's a cover.
A cover. Okay. And there it is. This thing is absolutely beautiful. Now, it is a little different in that there's the XLR connector sticking out the back right there. Michelle, what can you tell me about this mic? And maybe you could show us the example that you have, which is prettier.
Yeah, so I've got the purple one here, which, ooh, yeah, it's not quite as purple as it looks on this video, because it's a matte purple. So this microphone, this is the second version of this microphone that we've made. This microphone has been a labor of love for us here at Heil Sound, because our original version was just not up to our standards, and we took that opportunity to actually do something that we've been trying to do for a very long time. We fit a PR40 element into one of our fancy, pretty, vintage styled microphones. People had been asking us for years if we could squeeze a PR40 into the Finn microphone, which is a really cool, Turner sort of replica microphone that has LEDs in it and it glows and it's very neat looking. But it has a PR20 element in it, which for a lot of people, it wasn't, you know, their favorite, because they would try like a 30 or a 40 and that would just be their preferred microphone. Mm-hmm. And so we went back to the drawing board. We got the 40 in this bad boy. It doesn't quite sound like the microphone that Kurt's using because of some of the things I explained with the column below the element. Obviously, that doesn't happen here since the element is a side address in this case.
Yeah.
But it also has a roll-off switch in the back. I don't know if you can see that. We call it voice and music, but music is the full-range side, and voice rolls off 80 hertz off the low end. So you can get it a little more tailored, or if you're a ham radio operator, you probably want the voice side just to have more highs and mids and less bass.
In fact, we should talk about that for a moment, about the mics you make for ham radio operators, but I'll just point out one more. So this has the same element as the PR40, but it sounds a bit different because it's turned 90 degrees. You side address it like this instead of end addressing it like this, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, but it is beautiful. I've got to get me a stand and put it back here somewhere. I did use it on one of our shows, and I couldn't figure out if I really liked the music or the voice better. On voice, people did say, "Oh, you got no bass." But this show is a full range show. You know, we're not doing CQ here. We're doing regular broadcast. So I put on music, and it seemed like it was a little bit sensitive to bumps on the table.
Yeah, it's because it has all that low end. So if you roll that off, that'll also help with the handling noise.
Or if I mount it on my arm, as long as my arm is quiet, that should be okay, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, typically for a microphone like this, that's how you would be using it anyway, on a desk stand or a boom arm.
Gotcha. So that's the Heil PR-77D. Cool. And it's right affordable. I forget how much it lists for, but I thought it was a pretty good price.
$249.
Oh, it's a great price. There you go. It's less than this guy. This guy's got.
True.
little bit more going forward. And if you're going to, you know, do that kind of talk. So, ham radio microphones. A lot of our viewers, listeners are ham radio operators as well. And Heil is well known in that. Tell me briefly about that world of Heil Sound.
Yeah. So, Heil Sound to me is like a phoenix business. It has been so many things over the years. And it just keeps being a business. So we started out as a live sound company in the 80s. Bob redirected his attention to amateur radio, which is a passion of his. And we're kind of the last man standing in terms of microphone companies making microphones for the ham radio market. Most of our competitors, Shure, Electro Voice, have sort of, you know, left that market. It's not a huge market compared to pro audio, but it's one that we're passionate about, and we understand the specific needs of hams. And, you know, the microphones we make for pro audio are meant to be full range. They're meant to, you know, have a lot of low end and sound gorgeous and natural. And our ham radio friends need their microphones to cut through a bunch of static and noise. So, I mean, it's kind of like everything else. You're picking the right microphone for the right application. And, you know, we make products that help ham radio operators do what they do best.
And the I guess one of the main characteristics is with a ham radio mic, you want the clarity to cut right through, and the frequency response is less important, low end, high end, I would suppose.
Yeah, and when we first started the Pro Audio division, we had very serious concerns that people would see our ham mics and try to buy them and put them on live sound stages. I mean, not only will that not work because the connections are different, but if they had actually managed to get a 4-pin mic plugged into something, it would sound terrible on a live sound stage.
Yeah.
Because yeah. It's not meant for that.
Yeah, very, very different applications. So, Michelle, what do you, last question, because we're going to have to go here. What do you see as kind of the future, or what do you want, what thought do you want to leave our listeners and viewers with about microphones in general and about Heil mics in particular?
Well, I think, you know, strangely enough, the microphone business is kind of blowing up. And I was talking about this a lot at NAB show this year, that it used to be, as a microphone manufacturer, we were talking to audio engineers, front of house engineers, and suddenly in 2018, our customers are everyday people. They're, you know, recording podcasts in their spare bedrooms. Mm-hmm. They're recording their bands in their garages, and they're putting this content out everywhere, and they're looking for quality products. And I think one of the things that we're trying to do moving forward is be more aware of our different audiences and different market types and being able to communicate with them so that we don't use the same vocabulary that we would be using, you know, for professional audio engineers like yourself and, you know, a podcaster or a vlogger or a Twitch streamer. And, you know, I think the microphone business is only going to get bigger. I think it's going to get to a point where almost everybody owns a microphone because you want to sound good. You don't want to use your Apple earbuds that came with your iPhone because you know how bad they sound. And yeah. you watch your favorite YouTuber and they're using professional equipment and you want to sound like that. And, you know, you're buying Heil microphones to do that.
Well, you've made it easy on your website, heilsound.com, H-E-I-L, heilsound.com. And when you get there, click on the hairy guy screaming into his microphone for the pro audio. But don't worry, you don't have to be a hairy guy screaming in your microphone to do that. Or the ham radio side, if you're looking for ham radio style microphones, as you just differentiated them for us. So mics like the PR40 are going to be found mostly over on the pro audio side, and the mics that you showed as well, right?
Yes. And we do have adapters for our pro audio microphones to be compatible with the ham radio rigs.
Oh, okay. So if you do want to use a studio mic with your ham radio rig, as is shown on the picture here on the front page, that you can do that as well with an adapter. Cool. Chris, hey, I didn't mean to leave you out. Are you got any last minute questions for Michelle before we go?
No questions, but observations. I will say that I think one of the successes for Heil and the resurgence of microphones being popular, as she pointed out, I still believe certain microphone brands, I won't say which ones, have one or two mics that have been consistent over the life of the microphone. But what Heil has done with Bob and Michelle and everyone back at the home office is I think the Heil mic line has got to be the most consistent microphone that you can use for any application you choose, whether it be amateur radio or broadcast professional TV and radio. And I think that's what's creating the sense of, wow, this is the way to go because it makes sense because I can buy any one of the Heil mics and I know what the outcome is going to be. There are two other manufacturers of microphones that I use that I know when I buy them, I know exactly what to expect no matter how or when I use it. And it's the same microphone for the last 20 years. Same could be said for antennas and broadcasts. But I think that's what is helping the situation is the fact that it's consistent and you get it. I buy six PR40s. I know exactly how they're going to sound. All going to be exactly what I want. And I think that's what's really the success story behind Bob's genius and the delivery and all the engineering that goes into it. All the other people there with Michelle, I'm sure, sit there and go, right. It's a 77D. First generation did not meet the specs. Okay, we're not going to ask what they are. We're just going to say didn't meet it. They came back and said, here we go. That's the way it works. End user should understand it. Don't use a hand amateur radio mic for a professional and vice versa unless you understand the differences.
Hey, one little thing that I noticed is, Michelle, you guys loaned us some PR35 mics to do our NAB broadcasts with, and I'd never touched one before. And when I pulled them out of the case, I noticed that the entire mic body had a slightly rubberized feel to it. So it wasn't smooth and shiny like this. When you grabbed it, it was in your hand. It wasn't going anywhere. What is that part of the design about? And that you would pay attention to its typical use and give it that little bit of a rubberized feel.
Yeah. So most of the time when this microphone is used, it's being used on a live sound stage. And a lot of times it's being used as a handheld mic. So if you're on a stage and you're singing and your hands are sweating, this actually gives you a little more grip and purchase on your microphone.
Yeah. Very important. Cool. Hey, Michelle, thank you so much for being with us with Heil Sound. The website is Heil Sound, H-E-I-L Sound, heilsound.com. And I appreciate your expertise and you sharing it with us and your stories about how you met your husband, a jazz band. That's pretty cool. And my mic sounded terrible. I had to get a better one. That's awesome. Thanks so much, Michelle. And hey, I hope you'll encourage Bob to come back with us sometime as well.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks again. Chris Tobin, thank you for being with us. And thanks for your always interesting location, or often interesting, the rooftop in Newark. How's the weather now? Temperature falling a little bit?
It's beginning to. The sun is falling, is moving behind the building, so my lighting is changing, but it's still working out very well, so it's not too bad. Yeah, it's comfortable. And thanks again, Michelle, for the opportunity.
Yeah. All right. And I want to thank Suncast for producing our show. He has, you didn't even know it, but he had some issues at the studio, but he got those, he worked right through those, and we didn't even see them at all here. So thanks a lot, Suncast. Appreciate you doing that. Thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where we are here almost every week with This Week in Radio Tech. Tell your friends, your broadcast friends, your pro sound friends. We try to talk about things that that help you make audio better. And in the case of radio, help you make radio better. Digital, analog, audio over IP, whatever it may be. And it was, again, great to talk to Michelle about the microphone. It all starts right there with the microphone. Got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.